Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
My, my, here come the fuss.
Good evening and welcome to Pick a Flick. I'm Dave Bond from Do You Expect Us to Talk? And tonight we're going to be discussing the Cornetto trilogy. More on that and what it is in a moment. Joining me tonight, first of all, Mr. Paul Hawkins from the Blokebuster podcast. Hello, Paul.
Hi there, and well done for saying my name correctly. Nobody in America can do it.
You get kind of a very sort of haw sound on it.
Oh yeah, it's always Hawkins.
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. I don't think it's a capital offence. We won't take them back into the Empire just for that.
No, I've sort of just got used to it at this point.
Before we move on to our other guest, just very briefly, what's the Blokebuster podcast, Paul?
Well, the Blokebusters podcast is me and a friend of mine called Brian, where we do film reviews, and also recently we started doing little side things of anything that we decide we want to talk about, just little half episodes, as it were. And we just try and talk about the film and not get too sidetracked as we do it. This year we're trying something new where we do one new release a month and one film that's come out on Netflix. And we're just kind of going back and forth. It's been kind of fun. The most recent one we did was actually Good Burger, the Keenan and Kel
thing. Which I've not actually seen. I know Special Correspondence, the new Ricky Gervais film, was just dropped on Netflix. I don't know if you've got any ideas of covering that.
Oh, I think it's either going to be that or The Princess Bride, because both of those were released in the last month.
Of course. Okay. Also joining us, first time on a podcast anywhere, Mr. Andrew Doddridge. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Thanks for pronouncing my name right. So you're not going to believe how many people mispronounce my last name. So
okay, what are the most common mistakes on that then?
Doddridge, Doddridge. I don't know. Those are probably the two.
Okay,
ones.
Andrew, listeners, you won't necessarily know from accents, but both of our guests are from the United States, or broadcasting from the United States tonight. Andrew, where are you from?
I am from Manhattan, Kansas.
Okay, and Paul, where are you living?
Marion, Ohio.
Okay, so I'm saying good evening here, but it's sort of late morning over there and early afternoon. Okay, so tonight we're going to be covering the Cornetto trilogy. That is a sort of loose title for reasons that are in the film. Covering the Edgar Wright directed and Simon Pegg, Nick Frost starring trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. Made in 2004, 2007, and 2013, respectively. Before we get onto the films themselves, are either of you aware of the television show Spaced?
Oh, yes.
Andrew, is that something that ever crossed your
mind? I'm aware of it. I haven't seen it. I really want to, though, knowing that it's the same three people, right?
Yeah, it's all the same people. It ran for two series in 1999 and 2001, I believe. It also stars the lady no-no, Jessica Hine. She was Jessica Stevenson at the time. You see her as sort of head of the alternate crew in Shaun of the Dead. That's her sort of little cameo there. Very sort of riffing on pop culture. Very interesting show for those of you who have not seen it. But as some of our guests haven't seen it here, let's start off and go with our first film. Let's pick a flick. Shaun of the Dead is a 2004 British horror comedy film directed by Edgar Wright, written by Wright with Simon Pegg, and starring Pegg and Nick Frost, as I discussed in our intro. Pegg plays Shaun, a man attempting to get some kind of focus in his life as he deals with his girlfriend, his mother and stepfather. At the same time, he has to cope with an apocalyptic zombie uprising, as you do. Here's a clip.
Fucker. Got your pint? Got your pig snacks? What more do you want? Oh. And your favourite monkey? Shall I do Clyde? See, I knew you'd get over it. Put this on.
It's on random.
Oh, for fuck's sake. John, yes, please, mate. You know what we should do tomorrow? Keep drinking. We'll have a Bloody Mary first thing. Have a bite of the King's Head, couple of the Little Princess. We'll stagger back in. Back at the bar for shots. How's that for a slice of fried gold?
No.
Come on, man. Talk to me.
She said if she stayed with me, she'd end up coming in here every night for the rest of her life like these sad old fuckers, drinking herself to death, wondering what the hell happened.
That is harsh. These are rich, interesting characters.
Like who?
Snowy Gibbs, always surrounded by women. He's a bigamist. He strangled his first wife with a draft excluder and invented the mobile disco.
What about her, then?
Cockicidal maniac. She's an ex-porn star. She's done it all. They say she starred in the world's first interracial hardcore loop. Café au lait.
Okay, what about John, then?
He's North London Mafia. It's true, Big Al says so.
Yeah, well, Big Al also says dogs can't look up.
Think about it. Andy with a blade, gruff demeanour. Bernie, the trophy wife. He's connected. Why do you think there's a rifle above the bar?
Because the pub's called the Winchester.
Exactly. See? You don't need Liz to have a good time.
Oh, I don't, man.
No. No, hey, look at me. Can I just say one more thing? I'm not going to say, you know, there's plenty more fish in the sea. I'm not going to say if you love her, let her go. And I'm not going to bombard you with cliches. But what I will say is this. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, so Shaun of the Dead. Let's take this in turns. Paul, what are your sort of first memories of this film?
Well, I remember when it came out, I hadn't seen Spaced, so I ended up going into it totally fresh, not really knowing who Simon Pegg was, and coming out of it, going down to HMV and buying Spaced. So it was something that I really enjoyed, and one of the first sort of spoof slash homage films I've seen that I felt did it really well.
Yes, indeed. I think you're actually hitting on something that pretty much the same thing happened to me. I went to it of an evening, so certainly no stores were open, but within the next day or two I had bought both series of Spaced and really, really dug into it. Andrew, what are your memories of the first time you saw Shaun of the Dead?
Well, first time I saw it, It was actually pretty recently, a year or two ago, because I'm pretty young and I'm just getting into film, but I was just in my room watching it because I just knew about the Cornetto trilogy. I hadn't seen any of them, and I ended up loving it, the idea of everything, and I instantly watched the next two. It was great.
It was certainly completely something that was completely unexpected for me. I hadn't even heard of this film, and I think I was at Glastonbury or somewhere like that this year or that year, and somebody said it was coming out. And it had not been very long after the Snyder-directed Dawn of the Dead remake. And they said, well, that was good, but in 3 weeks or whatever it was, Shaun of the Dead. And I thought they were joking. I'd not even heard this film was coming. I had no idea who Simon Pegg was, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, any of them. So I went in as blind as you could, really, and somebody said to me on the way in, oh, it's going to be like Space the TV series, and I hadn't heard of that either.
Yeah, I actually looked up something. Edgar Wright found out that the remake of Dawn of the Dead was coming out, so he got a hold of the script specifically to make sure that they weren't too similar, and they ended up cutting a runner that was going to be the only running zombie in the film because there was going to be one in Dawn of the Dead. And then when Dawn of the Dead came out, there was no running zombie.
What do you mean by running zombie? Because
it was going to be the only zombie that actually went at a speed.
I thought they did in the Dawn of the Dead remake.
No, I guess none of them book it. Like, they just...
Okay, fair enough. I do remember, just as I sort of became aware of this film, the marketing around it described as a rom-zom-com.
Yeah.
Romantic zombie comedy.
That's about right.
Yeah. So it opens with Shaun living with Frost's Ed character, basically living on his sofa. And they're gentlemen that haven't really grown up, are they?
No.
Definitely not.
Man-child, I believe is the term.
Lots of little sort of preemptive things within this film as we go along. You see Shaun heading off to the shop to get Ed a Cornetto on the first day, and there's the kid playing football. And he tells him, you're dead. Lots of little sort of nods to what's going to come.
Yeah, I think the best part in the film there is when they end up going to the pub the night before the whole thing kicks off. And Ed lays out what's going to happen in the rest of the film by saying what they want to go and do.
I've heard this, and no matter how many times I've seen this film, I've never particularly noticed. So what's the gist of what he says? He basically lays out the plot of the film.
And I'm trying to get this up off my head, but it's along the lines of, we'll have a Bloody Mary, which the first zombie they run into is a girl called Mary. They have a bite of the king's head, which is when Philip turns into a zombie. A couple of the little princesses, or little prince, something like that, and I think when they go to the flat to get the three of them, stagger back here, which is when they're pretending to be zombies, and then back at the bar for shots, which is obviously the final shootout.
So, Andrew, what are the parts of the film that sort of really stick out to you?
Well, apart from the thematic elements, which are probably the best part of the film, like the idea of starting over, growing up, I don't know, those are probably my favorite moments of the film. But the filmmaking is, there's a couple one shots of Simon Pegg going out of his house, going to go get, at the beginning of the film, was it ice cream?
That's
the
right.
Cornetto. And then again, after he gets dumped by his girlfriend, he goes again, it's pretty much the same thing, goes get a, I think it was a Diet Coke or a Coke,
something like that. Yeah,
yeah. But
there's a little touch to that, Andrew, that I think he looks at a Coke first and gets a Diet Coke, and I do wonder if that's him trying to, like, grow up a bit.
Yeah, because he, obviously, when she breaks up with him, and then he, like, drunkenly writes out what he's going to do and, like, you know, make his life better, and the idea is he's making better choices by getting the Diet Coke instead.
Yeah, doesn't realise there's big handprints of blood on the fridge.
Yeah, just a little too hungover.
Did you notice also in that store both times was the groom? The groom that we later see in their house with one arm.
I didn't remember seeing him the first time, but
he's
the second
behind
time,
him in
yeah.
the queue the first time. The second time, I don't know if you see him in there the second time, but you see them in their house. He's actually an actor with a missing arm who actually wore a prosthetic for that first scene.
That's one of my favourite just little lines. He's got an arm off.
He's got an arm off. Yeah. One of the things that was always in the trailer from around that, in every trailer, I think, from around that time of the film, was them chucking the record collection. What did we make of that scene?
That was kind of fun. I think it's the only time anyone's ever thrown records at zombies in film. They're not a very effective weapon, really.
It's because the first one shatters and puts a little bit in his face, and they think, oh, that's good. Quite funny with recent happenings when they go through Prince's back catalogue, and he wants to keep them all until they get to the Batman soundtrack.
Yeah. And they, loads of little bits in the film are actually part of them as well, because when he said that was the second album I ever bought, that was the second album he ever bought. I do enjoy all of the little pieces like that that they put in.
All of these films do seem very exhaustively rewritten as they go along to add more of this detail. Particularly when you listen to a commentary to these films, all of these things are thought about. They don't just sort of throw out a script. They seem to work on them quite extensively. And even their reference from other films. Did anyone notice references to other zombie films? And other horror films, in fact?
I would say I noticed a fair few. I can't think off the top of my head right now what all of them are, but a lot of times they'll have the name of a character would be a reference to something, or there was a restaurant I think that he's looking at, and that's a reference to a horror director.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that one. The only one that I noticed was "We're Coming to Get You, Barbara," which is from Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, and that reminded me as well, the idea of when he says he's talking to Peter Finowich's character in the shower when he's a zombie, and then he ends up just reading out the "join us" line. That again is a direct reference as well.
Actually, that is the only other reference, the closing the door, the mirror, to see someone behind you. That's an American Werewolf in London.
That is one of Edgar Wright's favourite movies too, I know that. I watched a video where he said it was probably the main inspiration for him to become a director, so...
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Yeah. I haven't seen it, but...
An American Werewolf in London is recommend. I recommend that to all listeners. It's a straight-up horror film, but it has a strong sort of satirical, comedic bent within it. It's not a comedy in the same way that this is, but it's also quite a funny film.
Yeah, it's really good, although I would say you probably don't need to see the sequel. Or the loose sequel, I guess it is, the American Werewolf in Paris. Don't bother with that.
PlayStation 2 kind of level CG. It's incredible because one of the best transformation sequences in any film is the turn to when he becomes a werewolf for the first time in American Werewolf in London. American Werewolf in Paris is a Judy Delpy film that's rather a letdown, to say the least. So, I mean to ask, we're calling this the Cornetto Trilogy. Do you have Cornettos over there, actually?
I have no idea, actually. Do you know, Paul?
They don't technically exist as Cornettos. There's something very similar to them, though. I can't remember what they're called, but there's not as many flavours. They look identical, but you basically can only have chocolate or vanilla.
Okay. Well, that would have meant we would have missed the world's end. There would have only
yeah,
been
pretty much, and it also wouldn't have worked with the theme of the film. Eating a chocolate ice cream during a zombie apocalypse doesn't quite have the same impact.
No, I guess not. Andrew, I know you don't remember this film from first release, but are you aware of whether the film had any sort of profile over there and its sequels, for that matter?
I'm not entirely sure. Is it really popular in England? I mean, it's popular here. It's like British film, as a British film, like, it's doing well in the United States, for sure. That's all I know.
And I tried looking up a little bit about this, and apparently, originally it was going to be straight to DVD, but there was such a huge following in America saying that they wanted to see it in cinemas, that it ended up getting a theatrical release and doing not too badly.
I'm looking at it here. Opening weekend in the United States, it earned $3.3 million. But it was a very, very limited release. It's taken $30 million worldwide overall. Which, when you think that's, you know, top-end Kevin Smith grosses, that's actually not bad at all.
Yeah, I mean, okay. The film was made for, what, $4 million, I think?
$6.1 million. Yeah, so it's a fairly low budget film that has continued to sort of resonate, particularly with the fact that it's had sequels, which we'll come to in just a moment. That was our first pick flick tonight. Okay, moving on, 2007 saw the first. I'm always tempted to say sequel because this is described as a trilogy, but it's not. It's a completely different story, but it's the same team. Hot Fuzz is a 2007 British satirical action comedy film directed by Edgar Wright, and again written by Wright with Simon Pegg, and starring Pegg with Nick Frost. The three and the film's producer, Neera Park, had previously worked together on the television series Spaced, which we've mentioned already, and the film we've just discussed, Shaun of the Dead. The film follows two police officers attempting to solve a series of mysterious deaths in Sanford, a fictional small English village. Over 100 action films were used as inspiration for developing the script. Filming took place over 11 weeks in early 2006 and featured an extensive cast along with various uncredited cameos. Here's a clip.
27.
Have you ever seen Point Break?
No.
Amazing bit in Point Break where they jump over fences.
Is there, no? 29.
That's Swayze's just robbed this bank. Keanu Reeves is chasing him through people's gardens. And he goes to shoot Swayze, but he can't because he loves him so much. And he's firing his gun up in the air. He's like, oh!
30.
Have you ever fired your gun up in the air and gone, ah?
No, I have not ever fired my gun up in the air and gone, ah.
30.
Sorry, I just feel like I'm missing out sometimes. I want to do what you do.
You do what I do. What on earth do you think you're missing out on?
Gunfights, car chases, proper action and shit.
Police work is not about proper action. Or shit.
29. If you'd have paid attention to me in school, you'd understand that it's not all about gunfights and car chases. Fire up the roof.
So, Hot Fuzz, at once a very different beast and a very similar beast, Andrew.
Yeah, that it's pretty similar in the thematic elements, and it's quite genius if you really think about it, the twists and everything in this film.
Do you mean the writing more than anything else, the way the plot comes together?
The writing, and then the spoof, obviously, of action films, for sure.
Yeah, this is really to action films what Shaun of the Dead was to the horror genre, I would suggest. Paul, what are your memories of Hot Fuzz on release and your reactions to it?
Well, I remember originally liking it, but not as much as Shaun of the Dead. But, like, growing older and rewatching it, I think that it's a better film than Shaun of the Dead. And also, out of the three, the most heavily laden with callbacks and references, I think.
So the most, you would say, possibly extensively written.
Probably, yeah. I think this is the one. I know that the third one came fairly easy to them. I think this is the one they probably worked the hardest on.
I think I'd probably go along with this. I found the film, personally, less accessible on first watching than Shaun of the Dead. And I think that may well be, and we'll come on to this with the next film as well, and I think some of that would be the lead character played by Pegg in this film, Nicholas Angel, being a more distant character than Sean. What do you guys think of that?
That's a pretty true fact. A lot of people can relate to Sean, but yeah, but if the right audience can find some stuff for the Nick Angel character in Hot Fuzz, I think so. I mean, I am not an adult, I should say, so I don't have a job, and I'm not crazy in love with my job because I don't have one, but I feel like Nick Angel is really similar to David Duchovny in The X-Files. Do you know what I'm talking, The X-Files?
I don't personally, because I'm not an X-Files viewer, but I know that our editor and the owner of this podcast, Tony, runs the X-Cast, so he's going to know exactly what you mean. For those of us who aren't X-Files fans, can you elaborate on that, please?
Well, David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson are part of an X-Files team where they're like part of the side of the police where they try to find like weird different things going on instead of like normal crimes, kind of like alien. He's obsessed with aliens, David Duchovny, and he's basically just, that's his job is his life. He doesn't care about anything else. And I haven't watched the entire series, just a couple seasons, but yeah, that's pretty much the basis of it. So I found a lot of similar elements from him to Nick Angel and Hot Fuzz.
So in your case, Paul, did you find the same sort of difficulty as I did sort of relating to the Nicholas Angel character, or like with Andrew's reaction, perhaps you saw parallels with characters you knew, other characters you may have known?
I actually didn't have too much of a problem identifying with him in the film. Maybe because I'm a very logical person, so I'll look around and see people acting in a way that I don't understand, and like, what, you know, why don't you just do this? Like, do it by the book. It's exactly how you're supposed to do it. And then I fully embrace the idea of he's gone to this town where everyone is basically either an idiot or has their own way of doing things, and he's just trying to get by, and I fully understand that, I think.
Looking at Simon Pegg, obviously, his character, we'll refer to him as Nicholas from now on. Nicholas is very, like we said, committed to his job, and the first thing is he's had a relationship fall apart. That's a cameo from, did you notice who was playing his ex-girlfriend? Yeah, you sort of get it from the eyes and the voice, really, but a lot of people didn't recognise that, so well spotted. There is another cameo in this film that you may or may not have noticed, a very famous director who visited the set.
Yep, that would be Peter Jackson playing the Santa that stabs him in the hand.
That's right, and that hand injury is sort of, you see him sort of flexing that hand all the way through the film. Yeah, absolutely. So he's sent down to Sanford. In, well, we assume Gloucestershire because it's based on the town of Wells, which is down around that way. And this is actually Edgar Wright's hometown. He worked in that summer field. But if the first film was summoning up sort of various zombie films from our history, this film kind of summoned up to me the likes of The Wicker Man and Straw Dogs.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, definitely the underlying, yeah. Obviously, the very top level is just paying homage to action film, but yeah, it got that sinister streak to it. That was a lot of fun, actually.
To be fair, I'd never seen many of the action films that underpin this. I've seen the first Bad Boys. I haven't seen Point Break, so I think an awful lot of the references did pass me by, whereas they hadn't in Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I'm not an action film fan too much myself, so. A number of them I didn't fully understand, but I did get that they were references.
I would suggest of the three films, I don't know what you guys think, I would suggest this probably has the strongest cast.
World's End might, I don't know.
Yeah, I would argue World's End, but that's not to say that this isn't a very well-acted film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just running through some of the names in this, for those of you who hadn't seen it, obviously we've got Peg and Frost, we've got Jim Broadbent, who was an Academy Award winner, Paddy Considine, Rafe Spall, who was also in the other two, Kevin Eldon, Olivia Colman, Bill Bailey, Timothy Dalton, first of the trilogy to have a former Bond in it, more of that, Edward Woodward, who was the star of the aforementioned The Wicker Man, Billy Whitelaw, British acting royalty. I tend to think of the Craze film when I first think of her, Paul Freeman, who was Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark, Rory McCann, who from Game of Thrones. It really is quite the cast, and this might be a reflection of how successful the Shaun of the Dead was, how much it resonated with people that they could make a bigger ask this time.
Yeah, and I thought the best example of like almost like, hey, look at who we've got in the film, is when Nicholas is being transferred, and first it's Martin Freeman, just, how's the hand? Then it's Steve Coogan, how's the hand? And then it's Bill Nighy. Again, just walking in, it was a fantastic.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like, here's three, you know, of, in England, quite famous actors, and like, there's a lot more coming.
And they're in virtually throwaway roles. You see them briefly at the end, but that's it.
Yeah, but I enjoyed that. There's so many films that they might get a cameo, but they'll overuse it. And I thought that those three, just being at the beginning and at the end, were quite well done.
Are you guys aware that the music supervisor's name is Nick Angel?
No, I wasn't, and I don't know if there's any link to... I don't know if that's where they've got the name from. It must be, I suppose.
They were very... He's very good friends with Simon and Edgar, and so they... when he signed on to use the film, they asked him if they could use his name.
The other thing that I noted watching the special features around this film, and I think we've talked... I think you alluded to this, Paul, in how written the film is, that they really did go out of their way to work out how a modern police service, as they insist on calling it, operates. And they really worked very, very hard on detail.
Yes, when this came out, I remember reading that police across the country were ecstatic that it showed off just how much paperwork there is when it comes to being a policeman, because no other film ever handles that. They go out, they destroy half the city just to catch the one bad guy, and you know, they're back on the beat the next day. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I read that too.
Andrew, how does British policing look to an American eyes shown through this film?
You're talking about everybody except Nick Angel?
I'm talking about the whole way it's presented, because obviously our police force service is somewhat different from yours, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I don't know the specifics or anything, but I just knew, since it was set place in England, that it was just going to be different.
I think the best thing about it is that this film has more guns in it than any... If you ever go to any English town, there's no way they have even a quarter of the amount of guns you see. Like, I was wondering when I was watching it where they got them all. Because, obviously, in America, the idea is everyone has guns. In every action film you see, everyone's got at least one gun on them with an unlimited clip that they just keep firing, and so...
I think they all got them from the farm, didn't they?
They did, yes. They actually... for whatever reason, this guy just had, 500 guns in a shed, so...
Genius move to take this out of London. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I think so, because doing it in London, it would have been a little too weird, I think. Like, you couldn't have a shootout in London. I don't think it would have worked.
You couldn't have a shootout stand out in the same way, could you?
No.
Yeah, like the setting at the end of the movie, the shootout and everything, it's pretty much perfect. It's just so memorable, the setting in all of these films, really. You just remember specific areas of what stuff's taking place in. That's a perfect example right there.
Having talked about such a strong cast for this film, which cast members sort of stuck out to you guys beyond our main protagonists, our leads?
Oh, wow. Besides the leads. The Andes, I guess? The Andes? The two Andes?
The CID cops.
Yeah, they pretty much made me laugh every time they were talking. I don't remember specific lines or anything, but yeah, they're pretty funny.
Paul, what about you?
Well, I'm a huge Bill Bailey fan, so seeing Bill Bailey as the two sergeants was kind of funny. And yeah, I did love the the two Andys, just because I love the way that they just had the back and forth. It was just a brilliant thing that, and again, talking about callbacks and stuff, the way that they just throw in, like, what, you want us to go through the whole town, just start a Aaron A. Arison or something, and at the end it is a kid called Aaron A.
Yes.
Arison.
I only ever picked
up. I was about to say that. Yeah.
I'm amazed how much I managed to miss in this film. I, watching it again now, I can't believe I didn't pick up Bill Bailey playing two characters before it was revealed, because it just seems so obvious once you know. I didn't pick up that line at all with the kid's name.
There's just so much that they shoved in there. I think my favourite scene is the one after Leslie Tiller dies, and it the whole thing with the swear box, which just the,
would
if
you, like
you don't
to
mind, I'd like to do it verbatim.
Carry on.
It just zooms in, he slams a pound or whatever into the box, like, Leslie Tiller was fucking murdered. And it's like, what, Anders was it? Yes, Anders, yeah, Anders one? No. What? Of course he fucking was! And then Danny shoves the pound, he's like, thank you, Danny! And then the Andy was like, you know, murder, 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 change the fucking record, and the other Andy shoves the pound in as well.
What I love about that, what I love about the swear box particularly is every word is crossed out or asterisked except the C word, which really, and in terms of...
Do they actually use that word? Because I don't recall it off the top. I'm sure it's in there, but I can't.
Yeah, Danny uses it in the pub where he's talking about, Nicholas Angel's talking about, I think it's his childhood. And he's talking, and he says, sounds
yes.
like a great bloke, and then he says that he was a criminal or something, and then he says, what a, well, I'll say it both ways. Then he says, what a cunt. And then he says, the C word, what a C word about the guy.
Yeah, now I remember that. And yeah, very well used. I'm surprised that they actually didn't have someone, like, maybe one of the other police officers walk in there and, like, make him pay the money into it later.
One of the things I just want to say as a little aside to people listening is if you ever get hold of the Blu-rays, the DVDs for this film, go and have a look at the little feature that they make on language, because they are they are required to provide a cut of the film that people can use on airlines and so on. So you've got to remove most of the bad language. And they kind of leave it in and replace it with words like wonka and prink.
So that's great. Rather than Jesus Christ, you've got cheese and rice.
Does that work? Does that work and make it good? I don't know.
They do it well.
it works in that you can't, if you didn't know any different, they could be saying that. It's not badly sort of dubbed, but at the same time, I think it is thumbing their nose at this requirement full stop.
Oh, definitely. The Funky Pete in Shaun of the Dead was fantastic. It's 2 o'clock in the funking morning. It's like, it's Saturday. No, it's not. It's funking Sunday, and I've got to go to funking work.
So, yeah, that was Hot Fuzz, everyone. 12 million budget, so we've got a huge sort of rise off last week. A box office more than doubled at 80 million worldwide. So that was our second pick flick tonight. Okay, so there was a very long sort of gap to the next film, 2007, right the way through to 2013. In the interim, Edgar Wright had gone off and directed Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He was already being linked to Ant-Man. Simon Pegg had appeared in the Star Trek reboot and the Mission Impossible films. So really, I suspect there was a lot of doubt as to whether a third film to complete this trilogy was ever going to happen. But indeed there was. So, let's pick our third flick. The World's End is a 2013 British comic science fiction film, again directed by Edgar Wright, again written by Wright and Simon Pegg, and starring, as usual, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, returning this time Paddy Considine, Martin Freeman, and also starring Rosamund Pike and Eddie Marsan. The film follows a group of friends who discover an alien invasion during an epic pub crawl in their hometown. Wright has described the film as social science fiction in the tradition of John Wyndham and Samuel Ude. It is the third and final film in the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, following the ones we've talked about. Here's a clip.
I don't remember him being that friendly.
He's obviously one of them.
How can he be? He remembered me.
We don't know what they remember.
Or maybe they have selective memories.
Yeah, like, what's his name? Me!
Maybe it's one of the others, like the Reverend.
It's very hard to tell, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, is he one of them, or is he one of them?
Wait, which ones are the thems again?
Well, they're both thems, aren't they? But there's two ways of saying it. Is he one of them, or is he one of them?
We need different terms. One for people that aren't robots, and one for robots who aren't robots.
Why? We need to be able to differentiate between them.
Them?
And us.
Yeah, I think the pronouns are really confusing.
Yes, I don't even know what a pronoun is.
Well, it's a word that can function by itself as a noun, which refers to something else in the discourse.
I don't get it.
You just used one.
Did I?
Yeah, it is a pronoun.
What is?
It.
Is it?
Christ, no!
We just need a fucking word so we can identify who's who. He's a blank. She's a blank. Those two people are definitely blanks. Sam. Go to Steve.
All right, Sam.
Oh, cramps.
How's your night going?
Good. Sort of.
What do you mean, sort of?
Well, it's weird, isn't it? You come back and everything's the same, but sort of different.
Different how?
Just weird.
How weird?
You're getting that, Gary.
Come with me! Oh!
Fuck's sake, Gary, take a hint!
It's all right, I'm not trying to have sex with you.
Why are we in the disabled toilets, then?
There's something I need to tell you right now. Unless you do want to have sex, in which case I'll tell you afterwards.
Tell me right now.
Have you noticed anything creepy about the twins, apart from the fact that they're twins?
Just because they're twins doesn't automatically make them creepy.
It does a little bit.
You had sex with them.
A, I did not. And B, how did you know about that?
A, it's a small town. B, I'm not stupid. And C, they told me.
Right, well, I did once, but I was wasted. Which was creepy because it was like there's four of them. I'm not proud of it. I am a bit.
Is this what you wanted to tell me?
No, this is...
You okay, Sam? I need a cigarette.
Now, of all the three films, this is the film that was probably most aimed at my generation. I was sort of in my mid-teens around 1990 when the sort of story begins, if you like, them as teenagers doing the original pub crawl. So this film should have spoken to me, possibly a bit more. Guys, tell me about the first time you saw The Worst World End. Paul?
Well, this was at the point when I was living in America, so I was very glad to know that it was coming out in theatres, and I actually reviewed this on my podcast as well, and it when it came out, I knew roughly what it was going to be about, and like having seen the other two films, I could pick up on things that they were saying at the beginning that might be coming back later, but even so, I thought it was really well done, and I think at this point it's actually my favourite of the three.
Why so? In a nutshell, we'll talk through the film in a moment, but sort of in headline form, what about this stands out for you?
Well, I think that Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are at the top of their game in this, and just everything in it, all of the writing is like spot on, the pacing is, I would say, better than the other two films, and I'm a big sci-fi fan, so I love that element of it as well.
Andrew, tell me about your experiences with The World's End.
I might actually have to agree with Paul here that this part of me likes this the most out of the three. It's incredibly underrated. I think it's due mainly to I was grasped more by the film, and I could see myself becoming this person. Mainly because I just got out of high school. I just got out of high school when I first watched it.
Oh, this film would have really spoken to you.
Yes, it did. But, yeah, so it's just a fear of, like, becoming that person. And I was just grasped from beginning to end. And, just the idea of self-destruction and everything. Tracing back her past. Simon Pegg, best performance in the entire trilogy, too.
Yeah, I'll come back to what I think in a moment, but it's a very good point, actually, to talk about the Twitter poll that Tony put out on the Pick a Flick feed. He asked, he put a poll out saying, what's the best Cornetto trilogy film? Any guesses on where this might have gone before I read it out?
I personally think that what probably happened, just to nostalgia, is it went Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, World's End.
That is my prediction as well.
It's not a bad prediction. It's not quite right, but it's nearly right. Shaun of the Dead took 46% of the vote. Hot Fuzz also took 46% of the vote.
Wow.
The World's End taking 8%.
That's rough.
It is. And also, when I look at, before we go into the film in a bit more detail, it's got by far the largest budget. We're up to $20 million for this, and it took 46. A $34 million drop from the previous film. So something about this film didn't really connect. From my own perspective, I think on first viewing, it probably was my favourite. But on rewatch, I struggle with the Gary character. I think the characters are sort of starting to become less identifiable. Yes, we might end up as this guy, but do we want him as the lead in our film? But that doesn't seem to have been a problem for either of you. Something about Gary resonated with you both, would you say?
Not so much me. I think I would see myself more as the Nick Frost character, but I have had a couple of friends who are very much the Gary King character, so I had no problem with him at all because I'm friends with a couple of Gary Kings. So.
He had the same car he'd had at 16, he'd had the same clothing he was wearing at 16, and he had the same cassette tape in the car that he'd been playing at 16. This guy had not moved on at all and had actually... Well, I suppose this is where I was sort of going to go with this. Of the three films, I think the first and the third both have slightly jarring shifts of tone. And it's more noted in this. I think in Shaun of the Dead, it's the part where he has to shoot his own mother. And we're laughing along with this film and we've just had a really funny bit to sort of Queen music. And suddenly he's got to shoot his own mum. And I wondered what on earth I was watching. And in this film, where we find out Gary is a severe alcoholic.
And it's a fantastic... bit, and it actually happens at pretty much the same point in the film as having to shoot the mum as well. It's a definite third act reveals where you end up having to deal with this, and I think it really worked because you've had all of this fantastic fight sequences, including one of my favourite fight sequences of all time, and so many great lines.
Are we talking
stuff.
About in the gents' toilet?
No, but that is really good. It's the one where I can't remember which pub it's in, but it's the one where every single time you see Gary King, he is trying to sip that beer, and he keeps that beer glass exactly level while he's fighting, so he doesn't spill any of it. It's so well choreographed. I loved it.
It's certainly, as somebody, one thing, I mean, there were a couple of things about the film that did resonate with me, and I'd be interested to see how it resonates with somebody who born and raised in a different country, but certainly the pub crawl, I think we've all done them at some point, and that you do hit a crossover point where you're a bit drunk, but you're trying to appear normal. And that's the part where Nick Frost's character, Andy Knightley, puts his hand through the window as he's talking. It's just, I haven't done that per se, but I've done the I'm fine, honestly, and then fallen over or something. And I think, yeah, the other thing is the mythical importance the pub crawl gets on. I mean, I don't know what would have happened 6 pints into a pub crawl when I did, say, the Smithdown 10 in Liverpool years ago, if I dropped my pint. I mean, I would have had an existential crisis. Do I order another one? Do we move on? Do we come back? So all of these things are kind of covered. And I guess the last thing I'd say, and I'd be very interested to see what you guys think about this, is the cast of characters, I thought, actually represented where a stereotypical school group might go and the different directions they might find themselves?
Yeah. Well, for me, I'm not exactly... I don't drink alcohol. I mainly relate to the character of Gary King and these people by imagining myself not getting past high school and thinking that's the best part of my life, I guess. Just the fear of that instead of drinking in high school and going back and doing it in a pub crawl. But yeah, that's really for me. That's what that's what grasped me to the film.
I certainly found as well, and again, it's a function of the plot, but we've got, they suddenly don't feel at home in their own hometown, because obviously there's been an alien invasion. But I know what that's like after you live away for a few years and you come back, and it's at once familiar and deeply unfamiliar. Obviously, you live away from home at the moment, Paul. I don't know if you've been through this. You've been live away from your original home.
Well, I'm fairly lucky in that I feel like I can live anywhere, but there are definitely times where you realise that this one thing that you just can't get that you really, really want. So, yeah, it's just that you'll spend a day or two just like, I really wish I could do that.
So the film ultimately ends with effectively the apocalypse. Did this take us by surprise? Did we expect that to happen given the name of the film? What did we think of where this film ended up?
I was up for anything at this point. Obviously, watching the film, I didn't think that this only happened in this one town. We see it through this town, but I figured that aliens wouldn't turn up and replace a single town. There must have been more than that. You know, replace them with the smashy smashy Eggmen. But I wasn't 100% sure how it would end, and I liked that, because I normally go into these films and about halfway through I know how it's going to end, because I've seen too many films and my brain will not stop going while I'm watching them. And this film, I had no clue. I didn't know which way they were going to go. So it was fun finding out.
A reason I think that it's only got 8% of that vote that was on the Twitter poll is because of the twist, basically. When Simon Pegg kicks the kid's head and blue stuff comes out and there's aliens. I feel like a lot of people were just like, at that moment, they checked out of the film, and they just like, I thought this is going to be a realistic movie about people going back to their past, and then it just takes a turn there, and I feel like it alienated people from the film, and what alienated, pun intended, obviously, but I actually like it. Like, for what Paul said, it's different. It there's no set story that you know what's going to happen first, second, and third act. And it's an oddly convoluted thematic element with these aliens and everything, but it definitely works for me, like Paul said too.
Okay, so that was the end of The World's End and the three parts of the Cornetto trilogy and the films with this creative team available today. So that was our last picked flick. So, Andrew, if there were to be a fourth, where would you like to see them go?
Well, I'm not as smart as Edgar Wright. I'm not very good with speculation. But the first thing that came through my mind was something space opera, some sort of Star Wars thing. But then I was like, that wouldn't work, would it? And then I just came back to the idea of, these films are all about growing up, starting over, also male bonding, and I came to the idea of possibly college students learning to grow up in college, living a different life, but then I'm not sure how funny that could be, because obviously these films are comedies, so those are my ideas.
So, Paul, where would you like to see a fourth film go?
Well, I was trying to think about it, and something in space was right up there, especially I was thinking Simon Pegg and Nick Frost could be second generation on a newly colonized planet, and they're having to raise their kids who have no idea what Earth was like. And so, like, them having to struggle with the two different cultures, I thought that would be good. And the only other thing I could think of was I'd love to see them try and do something animated, like, and I have no idea what, but I think it's the one area they haven't really gone into. So I'd like to see that. But yeah, I think space is the only place they can really go from here. Unless there's... I would love to see film noir, just because I'm a noir fan, but I don't quite see how they do it unless they did just do straight-up parody, which isn't their style. So
you'd hope so. I mean, certainly you've hit on the aspect that these films do tend to experience the unfamiliar through the eyes of the characters. A zombie apocalypse, a rural police force, which he's not used to. Obviously, going back to a hometown that's the same but different. It's an interesting point. I mean, I was struggling for anywhere new to go with these. I think that we've started off with a sort of, you know, feared apocalypse that got averted, and we finished off with the end of the world. I mean, certainly of the three that exist, I could only see a sequel to Hot Fuzz of the three of them. I don't know if there's more to be done in that world, but it would be slightly odd to have a sequel to the second of a three. So yeah, interesting. I mean, I know that there's talk that they would love to like to work together down the line in some way, but it wouldn't necessarily be in this vein. Be interested to see what happens. And that was Pick a Flick Tonight. So, guys, tell us where we can find you on social media. Andrew?
You can find me on Twitter at adodd16. That's A-D-O-D-D-16. And I also write reviews sparsely on letterboxd.com. You can find me by my name, Andrew Dodderidge, there.
And Paul, pimp your show and tell us where we can find you on social media.
All right. Well, my show, the Blokebusters Podcast, is available anywhere you can find podcasts, including Google Play Music now at this point. And Twitter at Blokebusters, Facebook.com, Blokebusters. We have a website, blokebusters.webs.com. It's fairly bare bones, but it's what we can do. And I'm on Twitter at His and Hurricane, which is His and an H-E-R-R-I-C-A-N-E. And it originally started out as a joint Twitter account for me and my wife. My wife hates Twitter, so now it's mine. And yeah, and I'm on Facebook as well. Just search me if anyone really wants to. I don't know why you would, but there you go. Yeah. And
you can find me at the Pasty Kid 1976. My podcast, You Expect Us to Talk, which is a film retrospective show currently based around the James Bond franchise, but it will move on. You can find that at Expect Us to Talk. Or facebook.com/expectustotalk. And I've been Dave Bond. That was Pick a Flick for Tonight. You pick a flick, we talk about it. Simple as that. Good night.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.